Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Weak economic reports, decent earnings reports, and stocks go higher. A recipe and a winning formula for stocks. And a rising tide lifts all ships. All this and much more on episode number 634 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there. Thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Of course, the co-host also of DH Unplugged with John C. Dvorak that we do on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. We stream it live, so if you haven't been there, 9 o'clock in the evening, p.m., Eastern time, for that matter. And if you haven't had the opportunity to do that, join in the chat room. I think it's something you should try. And I wanted to mention that we've reached a milestone. Well, reached it last week. Over 10 million downloads of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, and counting. So thank you so much for making this podcast one of the most listened to financial podcasts that are out there. And I really appreciate all your help doing that, as well as all of your kind letters, your notes, and your support. And this is, of course, we know, this is not just one or two people speaking at you. This is a community of people that are listening and are contributing. And that's what makes this so special each and every week here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So we have a few things to talk about. I'm going to be out of town starting on early Sunday morning, going up to D.C. I have some meetings with clients up there, and I thought I would get this out to you early. And there's a couple of things that I really want to focus in on, because there has been, I guess, a convergence. That would be the best way to describe it, a convergence of items and things that are starting to really boil up that are helping to push stocks higher. Now, as you know, we've talked about over the last several weeks that there has been, I would say, a lackluster amount of investor interest in the form of volume. Okay, we know that there's been a significant amount of retail selling that goes on and has been going on for the last number of months, taking money out of equity ETFs, equity mutual funds, putting it into cash. But at the same time, you may be wondering, we're seeing stocks go higher. And when I say stocks, I mean the indices. We're seeing the indices really start and to really pick up some steam over the last 3 weeks after we saw 4 weeks of downstroke in the markets, nothing major, a couple of percent. But all of a sudden, now that we're in earnings season and we have a few other things happening that are really starting to converge, it seems that there is the idea that easy monetary policy and looks like a flood of money back into passive, and the continuation, I should say, of money back into passive investing and buybacks and better than feared earnings and hopes for a trade deal are all really pushing up stocks. Now, whether it's just institutional or algos or maybe some of that sideline money that was and has been in cash making its way back into the markets is something that we really need to look at. So let's take a look at some of what's happening in a few of these specific areas and what it's doing for markets and how markets are handling various points of interest. For example, well, we saw that Boeing and Caterpillar came out this week. And I got to tell you, I think that both of these were pretty ugly. I don't think there's a lot of good we could really find in either of these reports. In fact, they were downright horrible. But, you know, what was really interesting to look at was these stocks did really well after the earnings. Yes, they were down initially 3, 4, 5%. And they dropped hard on the release of their information about their current quarter and their guidance for the future, but markets seemingly had no desire to keep these down. And one of the reasons for that is that, of course, these are key stocks in various industries, in indices, whether it is the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. What we're finding is that the rising tide is working really well to lift all ships. I mean, in other words, there was a good deal of investments going into the markets, and it really didn't matter about the individual stories because we have ETFs and passive investing. It was just like lobbing a ball of money into the markets without regard to what is happening underneath, because now investors are looking at the entirety of markets, the whole thing, the whole ball of all the stocks, the S&P 500, the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones, the Russell 1000 index, the Russell 2000 index, as the investment bogey. That's what we're going to invest in. A lot of people have shied away from investing in individual stocks. And, you know, you think, well, that makes kind of sense. Why would a lot of people who really don't understand and know and have a desire to really, look at the fundamentals and check underneath the hood, why should they go out and invest in those things? Why not just simply invest in an ETF that holds all of these? Makes a life a lot easier. And if, in fact, markets are efficient, well, just continue investing in a broad-based ETF or a mutual fund that covers all those areas. That makes a lot of sense. But when we have investors really focusing in on primarily the passive investing side, and that's where all the money is going, what happens is that when the ETF for, let's say, the S&P 500 is bought, essentially what's happening is that that individual is buying every single stock in the ETF, even if it's $50 worth, even if it's $1,000 worth. They're going and buying up that amount of money and is spread along all the stocks that are inside that ETF. Regardless of valuation, regardless of if it's a good stock or a bad stock, outlook, trade war issues, how it's going to be impacted by the economy. It doesn't matter, because the passive investor is saying, you know what, we're going to invest in the S&P 500. Therefore, the largest stocks get an unequal amount of investment because they are market cap weighted. So for example, let's talk about how this doesn't work efficiently. And a lot of the impact happens with individual names. So Caterpillar comes out with earnings. It was actually up 6% for the week. And this is after some really ugly guidance. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. It was ugly. Here's exactly what it was, right? They missed by 24 cents against expectations on earnings. They missed on revenue. They guided fiscal year 19 EPS below consensus. The revenues below consensus. They said, the company said that they expect end user demand to be flat and dealers to make further inventory reductions due to the global uncertainty and the global economic uncertainty. Well, how do we like that? Not so good, right? Stock dipped on all this, but you know, investors said right now, well, there's a lot of things that are going potentially well for Caterpillar, and maybe we shouldn't be so hasty to sell it off. Maybe it's already sold off into this and the expectations were so low, but hold on a second. If expectations were so low, they shouldn't have missed earnings. In other words, the expectations should have been tied to analyst expectations and therefore aligned with where they were, but they came out with a definitive miss on revenues, on EPS, and guided lower for the entire fiscal year 2019. But the stock was up 6%. Well, that's a lot to do with the fact that there's a lot of hope trade going on, the idea of the Fed's there, and this whole rising tide lifting all ships. So now what we have is a situation where a company like Caterpillar, who is very much tied in and pretty much welded on to the entire global economy, and their earnings and their overall benefit of growth will be really determined by things like how well the global economic condition is doing. Is there growth or not? Construction, infrastructure development, mining, you know, all the things that we know about from Caterpillar, plus their services, of course. Fixing old machines, making sure the maintenance is there. And we have what we know at this point, a very significant concern about the global condition around the world, inclusive of the United States, is starting to slow down. But Caterpillar is up 6% for the week. I think a lot of that is due to the fact that, well, investors think that in the future, things are going to get a lot better. Confidence about the current condition is pretty much muted. They know where we are and we know where we are. But you know what? The future is going to be brighter because maybe, just maybe, the trade deal is going to be lifted sometime in the future. We know the phase one is coming along very well, according to officials both in the U.S. and China. And if phase one gets done and signed and sealed and delivered, maybe we'll move on to number two, which could mean some kind of relief from the December 15th increase in tariffs that are currently still out there. Now, even if we do get that relief, the reality is we still have the baseline tariffs that are on. We've talked about that. I'm not going to beat that to death anymore, but there's nothing changed except for the attitude. But remember something, that attitude and the potential for something to get done in the future is all markets need to really get going. And this is the best explained from what happened in December of 2018 when the Fed all of a sudden turned on a dime and said, you know, we think we're done with this rate hike. And even though they didn't make any changes of significance at that point, except for the communication of the idea and the transmission of the idea that there's going to be potentially either no rate hikes or possibly rate cuts in the future, markets latched onto that and just tally-ho it away. So remember something, it doesn't only have to do with the actual report. It has to do with the forward guidance. The forward guidance for Caterpillar and the actual report were both bad. So the only thing we had to go on with that otherwise was that there was some good news from other companies, possibly inside either the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that helped move the stock higher. Because there was nothing really in the report that guided anybody towards a resolution to the slowdown that they're seeing here. But maybe, and just maybe, if the trade war is alleviated somewhat, there'll be a better opportunity for Caterpillar in the future. And a lot of people are asking, what's up with this? I mean, how are we so close to all-time highs with all the issues that are surrounding us? We see that companies are clearly reporting less earnings, and we're seeing that while there are earnings beats, the fact is that some of these and many of these are lower than expected from last year. Revenues are coming in, okay, about 60% of companies have beat on revenues, on revenue expectations, but we're still seeing a slowing. So what's up with all this? I mean, Europe's on the brink of recession. Markets are up like 20% in Europe. So much political uncertainty, and the markets in the U.S. are up 20%. The NASDAQ 100 reached an all-time high on Friday. The S&P 500, Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the NASDAQ, about a 1 to 1.5% below the all-time highs. And that's with earnings slowing down. The economic condition in the U.S. slowing down. Nothing better from China, from Europe, from Japan, from the emerging markets. So again, people are asking, what's up with this? Here's the thing. And of course, we know there's been some losers and winners inside of all this. Not like everybody is going up. But look what happened with Amazon on Friday. Amazon comes out with earnings after the close on Thursday. They miss, they guide down, they miss on revenues. and the stock is down $124 after hours, holding pretty well, maybe about $115 until the close of the markets in the after-hour session on Thursday. Friday morning opens up about 120 points down or so, climbs up through the day, ended up the day down 1%, down about $20 on the day. $20. That's it. So what's happening? And what do we need to know, and what can we glean from this? What can we really, as investors, except for getting annoyed about, oh, man, these things don't make sense, therefore I'm not going to play. Have you ever thought that to yourself? If I don't understand that, I'm not going to get involved. For the most part, markets are very difficult to understand in the best of times and in the easiest of times to understand them. Well, right now we're in one of those conditions that the markets are more difficult to understand. And here's the thing. Years ago, I was talking to a trader, okay? And this is an older gentleman, and he had a lot of experience. And one of the things he told me, and it always stuck in my head, was the idea that you can't fight the tape. He explained, listen, when the buy programs are on, it's on. Simple and sweet, end of sentence. Don't fight the tape. When the buy programs are on, the programs are on. And back then, of course, they weren't necessarily programs like algos and program trading that we're seeing that, you know, really today. But it was the fact that when the mentality and when traders and institutions were set to be buying, not much else matters. Nothing matters more than what the trading program of the pros is. So now we talk about how a lot of retail investors have pulled money out of markets, which probably could lead to a lot more volatility. But at the same time, institutions know that retail investors are fickle. They may be reacting to news incorrectly or correctly sometimes, but they also know that there's a big amount of the potential FOMO, fear of missing out, that will drag money back in, especially if there's a lot of money in cash. And if brokers are in buy mode, again, not much else matters to markets. He explained that even the junk in those kinds of periods are bought with both hands during these kind of cycles. Don't fight the tape. And moreover, don't fight the Fed. So these are kind of ideas that I remember from years ago learning about. So where are we today? What can we learn from this? So we're here right now, as we sit here right now, we're talking. Where are we? We're in October, the end of October 2019. And it's pretty apparent to me. I mean, I don't know if you see anything different, and love to hear if you do. You can always go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew and send me your comments on this. But it is very clear that we're in a buy mode, or maybe even a buy the dip mode. And the reason is it's worked out brilliantly over the last number of years or so. So it's really hard to fight the tape right now, right? And with that in mind, it's even harder to fight the tape and fight the Fed, as they're generally in a loosening cycle. They're in a dovish path. And it's not only in the United States here. It's all over the world. Central banks around the world are in a major stimulus mode. They're loosening. I mean, if you think about all the different central banks there are around the world, it's almost like one per week, maybe even two per week, are talking about dropping rates. And we're going to hear more about this next week, because we have our Fed coming to another rate decision, which it looks like there's going to be a rate cut. As a matter of fact, there's a 93.5% probability of a rate cut based on the Fed fund futures, which is a remarkable statement. Remarkable because we're almost at all-time highs in the markets. Employment is in great shape. Inflation is actually picking up. I think we're at 11-year high on headline inflation at 2.4%. Remarkable. In fact, not only do we see a 93.5% probability of a Fed rate cut for the October meeting, which is next week, but December shows a 22% chance of a 50 basis point cut from the current rate that we have now. In other words, there's pretty much a baked in, yep, we're going to see another rate cut. Now, whether or not maybe the Fed says, hey, we're at the end of this mid-cycle adjustment period that we're doing or whatever they're doing, or maybe it's they're going to say, hey, you know what? We think we're in good shape. We're going to let this bake in. But nonetheless, there's a lot of stimulus that's really being pushed into the economies around the world, and those oftentimes will find their way into risk assets. Remember that. Stimulus, dovish Feds, liquidity will find its way into risk assets. And there's something else that's actually going on in the background. It's also helping stocks. So we know the tape and don't fight the tape. We know that the Fed is clearly doing what they can to keep risk assets going, hoping that that will in fact create a bit of a ignition point for the rest of the economy, keeping confidence high and ensuring that individuals have enough money to spend, which would keep the whole wheels of the economy going. But there is something else in the background that's also helping stocks, something that, I don't know, I don't think you necessarily want to fight. What is it? Well, it's the current administration. The current administration, the president of the United States that we have now, President Trump, is all in on the stock market. In fact, they're very, and I would say unusually very active with markets. They're watching and working the social media accounts, and they're, I mean, really doing what they can on a regular basis, whether it's TV and interviews, commentary, trying to uplift the spirits of investors. At each time that we see the market start to roll over a little bit, there's another news blurb about how great the China trade deal is going. And it seems like it's just at the right times in an attempt to lift the markets out of some kind of gloomy condition. Now, are they wrong for doing that? No. Listen, a fat wallet makes a happy person. That is the belief of politicians. If we can make sure that the economy is going well and people have enough money and people have enough jobs and people therefore will be happy from the perspective of their financial condition, well, maybe they'll vote for us next time. And it's a good thing. I mean, really, it's a good thing. We all want our 401ks and our investment accounts to be bigger and bigger and bigger because we don't know what's going to be for the future. We don't know if Social Security is going to be there. We don't know how things are going to be priced in the future. Do we need to go into a long-term care facility at the end? Are we going to be seeing a major spike in inflation? Therefore, we need more money for the future. There's a lot of things that go on. But at the end of the day, all that aside, yes, it is better for markets to go higher and for people to have more money. And whether it's Navarro or Kudlow or Trump or any other source that are coming out, they're all pushing the idea that a trade deal is on and that's going to be great. You know, this phase one is happening and it's going to be great. And while we're not sure how far along they really are, we're not really, who knows? There's some negotiations. They're saying on their side, things are going well. Our side, this whole phase one partial deal, doesn't seem like that's really that difficult to get done, but they had to push it and push the idea this trade deal is going off and that lifted stocks on Friday at the end of the week to get close to an all-time high. Problem is, we know there's really no meat on those bones. I mean, when you look at really what they put together in the trade deal, and what the first phase one is, this whole idea of agricultural purchases and the potential for some of the sanctions to be at least, well, the trade, the tariffs to be at least held for that. And a few of the other components of this, it's not a lot of meat on those bones at all, but yet it should be pretty easy to get through. So just getting this closer to completion is being looked at as pretty much a win. And good for the U.S. and for world markets. And even if that's just incremental, I guess that's a step in the right direction. I can't argue with that. At the same time, yes, I think we all agree that it is kind of confusing. And we hear, and here's the reason, we hear a lot of confusing information with the fact that they're very active on social media and on in the press and on TV. There's a lot of confusing things that are happening. I mean, in fact, Friday, while we heard that there was a lot of progress made towards the trade deal and the phase one is looking really good, a few hours later, we heard that, well, Navarro now is not so happy with this and maybe blocking part of this because there's nothing in the phase one that has to do with intellectual property. But we knew that. So I don't know where they're going and why each member of the team is talking about different things to different places at different times. You're going to wonder, are they just playing with us somehow? Stocks dipped down on that for about 15, 20 minutes. You have to wonder why there's not a unified commentary coming out. Why, at one hand, earlier in the day, Navarro was said that, hey, we said to say that, hey, things are going pretty well. And then later in the day, discussion about, well, he may block part of this or really try to make sure this doesn't go through because there's nothing in intellectual property. And if that is the fact, if in fact Navarro is successful in blocking some of this deal, what is China going to say? How is China going to react to that? The problem is really, as I see it, we have social media and news outlets that are trying to be the first with a headline. Breaking news, right? I mean, I may be wrong, but it looks like is this incredible amount of headline fatigue or maybe even irritation, I guess. We look at the earnings reports and we look at what happened with Twitter recently, right? Down 21% on their earnings. Even though they have more users, it appears that there's a reduction, a real slowdown in engagement. And obviously, advertisers are holding back. I don't know if that's going to flow through. We have some earnings coming out next week for Facebook. If that's going to flow through to Facebook, I would venture to say that probably some of that will. But Twitter's earnings were horrendous. Now, that's one of the stocks that stayed down, you know, went down on the mat and stayed down, down 21% after they had just a horrible, horrible quarter. So I think that, you know, it's hard to fight all these things. And it's hard to find an administration that looks at the stock market as a benchmark for their success. I mean, love them or hate them, they really want the stock market higher and they'll do whatever it takes to keep prices up. I mean, it's become painfully apparent to everybody and possibly even joyfully apparent to a lot of people that they're really working that hard at trying to keep the stock market higher. So I don't know. Does that mean we're going to have smooth sailing? I don't know. I mean, we touched upon this recently in a past episode. And it is something to understand that we have these forces that are all converging to keep stocks higher. But also at the same time, I think there needs to be some care taken right now. Because while markets are in buy mode and there's a good deal of confidence that the Fed will cut rates, and yes, confidence is high, and we have good employment and buy box backs in full gear, and there's also market mechanics that we talked about several months ago that are helping to keep prices up because the more people that we have that are working, the more people that are actually contributing to their 401k, taking that money on a weekly basis, depositing into the side fund that's being held to then be deposited to the 401k plan that, where does it go? Goes into, well, stocks and bonds and things of that nature. But if some of this comes to an end, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we have a lower payroll number, higher unemployment rate. Therefore, less people are getting paychecks and investing in the market through their 401ks. I mean, sentiment can change on a dime, and we've seen this time and time again. Again, the most recent time was back in, we'll call it November 2018. It looked like markets were swimming along beautifully. And then all of a sudden, kapow. It's those times that we think, okay, what could go wrong? Nothing could go wrong. That we become overconfident. And that's the time to be just on your toes. That doesn't mean, I've talked about this probably over the last 3 months. That doesn't mean getting ahead of the trade. That means being more skeptical. That means being more aware. That means looking at things more clearly because you recognize that probably you're looking at things with a little bit of a tint in your glass. You want to make sure that you are looking at this correctly. And if, in fact, you start to see that there is a change, like sentiment is dropping, we have a continuation of a trend that has lower people being added to the payrolls on a monthly basis, that there is a change in the dynamic of the market, that you are aware of it. Because things change. In fact, John Markman, he's a guest that we've had on many times over the years. And I remember back one time he was talking to me and we started talking about, well, you know, how do things go in terms of markets and where are we now? And this was years ago. And he explained to me that during recessions, markets reprice. During recessions, markets reprice. Expectations and valuations are totally changed during recessionary periods. And if, in fact, we are approaching a recession, that's where we see that the prices start to change. Probably can be looked at from what happened at the end of 2018 again, because there was this whole thought that, wow, yeah, you know, we have an inverted real yield curve, which is a problem, which I agree with, by the way. And that means that maybe in the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to have a recession. And, you know, we are starting to see some slowdown. And moreover, the Fed is raising rates and they're not doing anything. And they're going to cause us to go into recession even faster. And if, in fact, there is a valuation reprice, an expectation reprice due to a recession, well, let's get on with it and get it going. And we had a major shift in the idea of when a recession would come, what the pricing of a stock would be, where it would arrive. The next year manifested itself into a major devaluation of equities that lasted, what, 2 months? But what's interesting was the speed and magnitude of the move. And that was enough to send a message to the Fed that they quickly realized, you know what, we may have overshot a little bit here. And they maybe were creating the potential for recession by their policies because they're known to do so. History has shown that the Fed has done this time and time again, either pushed too far and created an inflationary environment and created too hot of an economy, or slowed down too much and pushed us into recession. And I think a lot of people were reliving those concepts during the end of 2018. But it's also the reason we saw the snapback for markets, because the Fed quickly changed path. Now, the Fed is not the only thing that changes paths and why markets react, but they were a big part of this particular situation because it was seen that everything would be fine if it wasn't for them raising rates on a regular basis and on a predestined course. So what happened was we had valuations overshooting to the downside. We had like a 20% correction just in a matter of a month and a half or so. And when the Fed changed course and realized and then communicated that they weren't going to be as, they weren't going to continue their automatic rate hike program and they were going to look at the data, that downside looked for a way to resolve. And we saw value-based investors pick it up. And that started to all of a sudden move markets and churn markets and shorts covered. And then all of a sudden, the Fed got more and more dovish. That picked up. And then here we are this year. Because it went through the process of the value crowd starting to pick out value and find an area that they were really comfortable at buying. And then the Momo crowd or the Momentum crowd got involved. The Contrarian crowd got involved. And then the FOMO crowd took over. And we know what happened. We see that from just the price and levels where we are currently. And we often see this overshoot, right? There's a time when there's a overshoot that happens, then a resolution to the overshoot, and then kind of a reversal. And again, that's what pretty much the Fed did in 2018. They resolved that they overshot, and markets followed. So the big question right now in contemplation of next week's Fed meeting is are they now at a neutral position as compared to an overshoot on the upside, or have they overshot to the downside again? So if we thought that at the end of 2018 that the Fed was overshooting to the upside, the last couple of things that were done by the Fed, are they at neutral now? Or are they in an overshoot? It would seem like we're pretty much at a neutral point right now. I would venture to say that they're probably going to talk about some of the fact that they're not going to be as aggressively looking to cut. The data doesn't really support that. And with this question, we'll see an answer next week, of course. But markets, I think, have resolved, and of course, we can see this by them being at their highs again, that if the Fed is at neutral right now, and if a trade deal is realized, at least somewhat, this could be a catalyst that takes us to eclipse those previous highs across the board, even though current earnings, maybe not as great as they should be, and valuations are stretched a bit compared to historical levels. And you may be asking about valuations, right? I mean, yeah, that's a good point you make there. Hey, wait a minute. Got all this stuff going on, but what about valuations? And yeah, they are looking a bit stretched, but we also need to look at valuations in relation to interest rates, right? Because it's important to understand that while rates are low, stocks look attractive, because when you formulate a dividend discount model or an earnings-based discount or any kind of discount model to value a stock, the lower the interest rate that you have, the more you get a push on the upside of the valuation. So the Fed continues to lower rates, even though there doesn't seem to be, again, this kind of need for it. But if they do, and there is the assumption that they will continue to do so, you could see valuations widen again, because what you'll have is essentially not an earnings-based rally, but something you'll hear called a multiple expansion-based rally, meaning that price-earnings multiples get larger because expectations that things in the future will get better, therefore earnings will grow into that eventually. And people are willing to pay up for that now because they think there's some value in that. So the lower the interest rate is, the more attractive an individual stock or a stock market or an indice may be. And that's why when you say don't fight the Fed, is because you get these kinds of moves. Don't fight the Fed both ways, by the way. As the Fed is loosening and in a stimulus mode, not necessary to fight them unless they continue to be behind the curve with a slowdown. If, in fact, the U.S. economy is slowing down significantly, and if the Fed is just, you know, going along their merry way, not seeing forward, but just seeing where they are now, and if they don't get ahead of that collapse, if there is one, that's where you see some problems with prices, because you go into a recession. And again, as John Markman said, that there is a repricing of expectations and valuations when a recession happens. So again, we have to understand that with passive investing in demand in vogue, we have all of these things that are potentially beneficial for stocks, along with the understanding that a rising tide raises all ships. Because now if we have better valuations and we have Fed that's very stimulative and we have the fact that it's going to be a hope trade on, we have the idea that the administration is behind all this and people are now saying, yeah, I'll put money into stocks. Therefore, where are they going? Into passive investments. Underlying that is all these stocks that are just going up anyway. This is being pulled up by the fact that there's money going into the big money pit of passive investments, ETFs, indexing. But of course, the opposite is true as well. That's why we saw such an incredible drawdown when people started taking money out because liquidity is not what it used to be. Now, when you think of something like tides, we think about that a lot down here in Florida. The high tide is the time when the water is really clean because a lot of the junk that's on the bottom that's settled out really doesn't float to the top, stays hidden. Down at the bottom, you don't see it. You just see this clean layer up top, and that's kind of where we are right now. We're in the high tide, and some of the things like the Caterpillar earnings and the Boeing earnings, well, doesn't really matter so much because we take that and let the sediment flow down to the bottom, the junk and the muck go down the bottom. We only see the good things. And when the high tide, it is what is the problem is when the low tide comes, when the recession comes, when the slowdown comes, when sentiment isn't quite there, all the muck is visible. The junk at the bottom is right there, the broken bottles and the cans and the rocks and all the slime from the seaweed, the dead fish, all this stuff is there. And you see it for what it is. But again, when the high tide comes back, yeah, you don't even see it. As long as we swim along the top of the surface and don't go down below. As long as we swim on the top or invest looking at the horizon being in good shape, people are going to buy Caterpillar on these awful earnings. With the idea that, yeah, high tide's going to be around for a while. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that the Fed has now pretty much tried to get in all of our heads by saying that the economic cycle is dead. Therefore, where are we going to live always? We're always going to live in a high tide. We're going to live in a time of just plentifulness and beauty. We're not going to look behind the curtain. We're not going to look underneath. And I think the whole point is that when we look at all of these things combined, sentiment is a tremendous driver. Confidence, really important in keeping stocks moving higher. Don't fight the Fed. Don't fight the tape. Don't fight the administration. But that doesn't mean be complacent. You have to keep a really sharp eye out for when there's a change. And we'll see if that happens with next week with this rate adjustment that's going to be happening. I don't know if they're going to spoil the punch by, maybe coming up with some, some commentary that tries to tame down markets a little bit because they can have a little bit of leeway with markets being so close to all-time highs. But we'll see. I want to mention that last episode, we got some great feedback on the idea that earnings season seems to be a high jump over a low bar. And if you hadn't had the opportunity to listen to that yet, it was episode number 633, I believe it was. And I'll put links, of course, into the show notes over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com for our information and strategies, the long short style that we have, the TDI managed growth strategy, the global allocation strategy, the investology strategy, and portfolio management system, which has a $10,000 minimum, that last one. And if, as you know, I'll mention again, you can ask me any questions you want. Find out more about what we're doing or just give me a comment on how you love what we're talking about or think you're full of crap. I don't know. Whatever it is in between, you're welcome to comment, and I really appreciate those. So go ahead and do it over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just simply go over to the Ask Andrew button, click it, and then type away. So what are we going to do? We're going to end it right there. Again, thanks again for joining me, helping us reach the 10 million download mark. Very exciting. 10 million. We're going to end it short because I'm going to be getting on a flight very shortly to DC, and I'll be checking in. I'll see you again next week. We're going to be there. You're going to be there. Make sure your friends and family are there as well, and listen to DH Unplugged on Tuesday night. I'll give you a recap of what I did in DC, what I saw, a couple of fun places I'm planning on going aside from some business that I'll be doing there. But I want to thank you so much for joining me and being a part of this and being a part of the community that we call the Disciplined Investor and the podcast that started this whole thing off. So thanks so much, and I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.